My name's Brent Chittenden. I am a podcaster with a podcast called True North Nerds. You can find us at truenorthnerds.com. I get to host a lot of these panels. This is the first time that I think I've met any of you guys, though. I don't think I've had a panel, except for Dave. Dave, I've had one or two, and I always screw up his last name.
McKeg.
McKeg. Yeah. Did I get it that time?
Yeah, you did.
Sweet.
Yeah. Just so like McDonald's, McBacon, McKeg.
So for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to be talking coloring and inking in the world of comics. Because I always say comics is a little anonymous until you get to shows like this. Each of the panelists would say who they are and what they're known for, and we'll start at the far end of the table and work towards me.
Okay, my name is John Beatty, and I started inking in comics back in 1980, the Bronze Age, and some of the stuff that you may know my work from is working with Mike Zeg first on Captain America, Secret Wars, Punisher miniseries, a lot of different covers at Marvel. At DC, I did 8 years of Batman work, 3 years on the monthly Batman book with writer Doug Minch and penciler Kelly Jones.
My name is Dave McKeg. I'm a colorist. I also worked on the Batman animated series as the color designer, and I do a lot of illustration work for video games and things like that as well. I'm probably best known in comics for having extended runs on New Avengers, All New, All Different Avengers, X-Men. I worked on a book called Next Wave. I worked on a book called Superman Birthright. That was pretty popular.
I want to see that one.
I want to see that one too. It's not an all-ages book, though.
It's a how-to book.
Yeah. And I'm currently working on Lucifer for Vertigo, a book called Low from Image Comics, and Fight Club 3 for Dark Horse.
I'm Nolan Woodard. I've been an exclusive colorist at Marvel for 7 years. Worked on tons of X-Men. Was in the X-Office for a long time. Did Thrawn, Darth Maul. Currently working on Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, Dead Man Logan, and doing an upcoming Conan short.
I'm Jay Leiston, inker. Mostly known for The Return of Wolverine, Death of Wolverine, The Uncanny X-Men, starting with 500 through numerous iterations, and currently working on Symbiote Spider-Man and the comic book day book coming out in a few months.
I'm Craig Young. I worked on, I guess, most known probably for Runaways, in that, and do a whole bunch of different books on for Marvel and DC, mostly Marvel. The last thing I did recently is Daughters of Dragon, which you can catch the trade paperback. Came out digitally first, so I think a couple weeks ago it came out, so catch that soon.
Alrighty, so I like these panels to be interactive. If you've got a question, just raise your hand. I will make sure to get to it without any issues. I'll just yell out, and please excuse me, I'm going to use the most generic term to describe you when I see your hand up. Let's start with the basic but hardest question to answer for all of you. What led you into coloring and or inking? What led you into that path as opposed to some other art duty, or was it something that you always wanted to do straight out the gate, or just something you kind of fell into? Let's use the table rotation.
For me, I think the time period that I got in, it was something that in today's market, a lot of artists will come in and they'll be like the penciler, the inker, the colorist. They can do the whole thing. Back in the 80s when I got in, it was more of an assembly line type thing that they needed to have done. So while I still did penciling, my inking skills were a lot stronger. So with the help of one of my collaborators, Mike Zeck, and tutor Bob McLeod, who's an inker, they would give me advice on how to, you know, improve my work and push it forward and stuff like that. Not always the kindest advice, but sometimes that's the best you can get, because you really learn it then. And so basically, the question was getting in, right?
Yeah.
And so it was. It's a very different ball game now when people come to my table and ask me, how do you get in? In this day and age, you have the internet. You can get your work out there to hundreds of thousands of people. In my time, you had to actually come to a show and hope that an editor would be there or have somebody that could, like, show your work to an editor. Like, when Mike was working at Marvel, he was sending me pencils that I could lightbox, and then he would bring them in and kind of show them and get a temperature read on what they were saying and get back in touch with me. So it's changed quite a bit. So my way is probably outdated by now, and being online is probably the best way to get noticed these days.
Yeah, I'd say my way would probably be even harder. I went through advertising illustration in Winnipeg at Red River College, and this was in the mid-90s when computer coloring for comics was first being introduced, and there were three companies in the world that were doing it. One of them was Digital Chameleon in Winnipeg, and they just came and hired my entire graduating class. So, do you want a job? Shh. Coloring comics? Okay, sure. So I worked there for 2 years, and then I went freelance, and I've been freelancing for 23 years since. So my way is not the normal way, I don't think, to get in.
I don't think there is a normal way, really.
Well, now, I mean, like you said, people see your work online. If you get an online presence, then you're golden. And you get a double bonus if you have an online presence, because publishers will know that you can promote the work.
Right.
And the more you promote the work, the more sales they know they're going to get. So they're getting added value when they hire somebody who's got an online
free
following.
PR.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. PR translates to sales. So, yeah.
My story is more convoluted. But when it comes to comics directly, I wanted to be a penciler, and I'm skipping a ton of stuff before that. But my background's in pre-press. Like, I was a retoucher for Nike for almost 10 years, so I knew Photoshop really well, but it never occurred to me to be a colorist for some reason until my friend Sean Crystal, who's an amazing penciler inker himself, said, Nolan, why don't you try and be a colorist? You know Photoshop. You dealt with color for 10 years. It's like, oh yeah, I should do that. So I did.
Just want it and it'll happen.
There's a lot more to it than that, but that's the refined version.
Yeah. For me, it was when I was in college and high school, I did a lot of illustration work, mostly geared towards architecture. So it was a lot of pen and ink and using different tools, like straight edges and curves and all that stuff. So I was kind of comfortable with those tools. And as I built a portfolio to get into comics, I didn't really realize that it was pencilers and inkers and colorists until much later. So I was kind of trying to do all of it at once. And once I met a few pros back in the early 90s and learned that there were people who penciled and people who inked and people who colored, the feedback I got on my portfolio was always that my line art was very, very clean. When I penciled it kind of rigid, and it was very, very sharp. It wasn't much more sketchy the way things get built up over time. So when I started talking to different studios and different comic book companies, basically everybody was pushing me towards becoming an inker, with my goal to eventually do finishes and then pencils, because I had a history of the people that I was a fan of as artists were all people who could pencil and ink. So I just kind of tried to focus on that. And over time, realized I was a much better inker, like everybody said, and it's worked out for me.
Well, my story is like, I went to university first, and so it's academic, but after that, I kind of like fell back in love with drawing. So, but I didn't really draw since high school, so from high school to like maybe 4 years after, I hadn't drawn. And the best stuff that I did was probably copying a lot of the 90s comic books, so it was. And it wasn't very good. So, I mean, like, I ended up falling into a studio in Toronto. Back then, there was no internet. So, a lot of the comics communities and a lot of people gathered together in studios. And everyone there was way better than I was. I mean, for example, Steve McNiven was actually in the studio there. So, I mean, like, everyone was better than me. So, I was just trying to learn off everyone. So, I started thinking as trying to train myself how to draw better, just learning off other people. So when you're inking, you kind of start analyzing everyone's structure a lot more and how they draw, how they do cross-hatching, and all different techniques. So I learned a lot off all the people in the studio. And I kind of fell into that role. No one else was inking. So whenever they do a pinup, they go, hey, Craig, you want to ink this? And I'm like, sure, I'll ink it. So, I'm thankful for everyone in the studio for, putting confidence in me inking their pages, because I wasn't very good, because I learned raw. There was no books back in the day. I couldn't learn it. So I'm just putting, like, black ink, and if you make a mistake, it's there. So, you can't really go back. But a lot of those pencils were pretty good, and I fell into it, and then ended up as more people in the studio, we get more incredible artists and different styles, and I learned all different styles. And I kind of enjoyed inking because of that. You get to see every single penciler, learn little different tricks of each different penciler, and then you apply it to your own artwork. And Adrian was there at the studio, and he got noticed by one of the editors, and after a while he recommended me as inker, and I got into Marvel, and they liked my stuff and kept me busy for the last 15-20 years. So.
So this is a question I always love asking art professionals, and I think given sort of the span of everybody's careers here, we run like a couple decades going from one side of the table to the other. What's your toolbox look like? What are your implements of destruction, so to speak, and how has it changed over the years?
Well, I work both traditional and digital, so just whatever really comes my way. I like to be able to handle both sides of that equation, and so I kind of started slowly getting into digital when it came about, but I didn't fully transform over. And then some jobs that I did for Disney, they were asking me, hey, can you do digital inking and stuff? And I was like, well, okay.
You're not going to say no.
No. And just by, birth by fire, kind of, I threw myself into it and got the knowledge and started doing it. So, you're always going to have those instances where I think it's better to know both analog and digital, so that, at the end of the day, it's all going to wind up in a computer now, whereas before it really didn't. But so it's good to know both, I think. I think that if you learn traditional, it might be easier for you to transform yourself into working digital with the eye-hand coordination. I know some people that have started out and work completely digital. You give them a brush or a nib with a bottle of ink, and they're all over the place. They can't do anything. So that might be the exception to the rule, but I know some people, they're like, how do you do that? And I'm like, well, I've done it for, all my life. So it's a skill that I still maintain. It's just something I don't want to give up, and something that, at the end of the day, if somebody wants an original, they can still have it. So
you can't sell pixels.
Exactly. Well, you can, but
yeah,
original pixels. Sense, right.
Original,
yeah.
Pixels. Yeah, I work all digital. I've always worked all digital. I started off with a graphics tablet on my Commodore 64 when I was 12.
Wow.
It was called a Koala Pad. It was garbage. But it was technically a graphics tablet. And then when I was in advertising illustration in 1990, I was working on Photoshop version 1.2 on a graphics tablet. So I've been doing it digital for 25, 30 years or something like that. But I never work traditionally. Everything I draw, everything I do is all digital. I did one painting in the last 25 years of Crow, and I sell prints of it, which is great. But I'm starting to think that I should move into doing more traditional media stuff. So I've got some watercolor pencil crayons. I'm going to start forcing myself to learn that undo doesn't exist in the real world. I have to stick with what I do the first line, because it's like you said, if you learn both, you get tricks from both mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
And if I learn to work with a pencil and get my line exactly right the first time, then I don't have to mess around digitally trying to get that line right digitally too. It saves time and your skills go up, and it's good to try to do cross-platform like that.
As a colorist, everything's in Photoshop, and while that's a really simple answer because it's a single tool, there are tools within the tool, and that's what differentiates different colorists. Just the colors we use, the types of brushes. So it's all digital for colorists. If I do pencil or ink on a rare occasion, I still like to digitally pencil, but there's something nice about hand inking. So I'll print out a blue line and ink that and then scan it back in. But otherwise, day job, all Photoshop.
But it doesn't have to be Photoshop anymore. A lot of old school guys stick with Photoshop. But Clip Studio is really hot because there's stuff you can do in Clip Studio, like flatting.
You still need Photoshop to translate it to CMYK.
Maybe. Do you? Really?
Yep.
All right.
It doesn't do CMYK.
Okay. There's cheaper ways than getting Photoshop probably. But
yes.
Point is, there's different ways to skin a cat now. And yeah. It's good to know a lot of different tricks.
So I do mostly traditional work, using pens, Crowquill pens specifically, and then brush. When I started out inking, at the time, Adam Hughes was super popular, and Mark Farmer was his inker, and he did everything with a brush. So I thought you had to do everything with a brush. I'm trying to draw buildings with a ruler, and it was a good experiment. It taught me to be very stable-handed. But when I actually started getting work, it was through a studio that was predominated by people who did Crowquill inking, which Crowquill is essentially just a circular piece of steel that they've cut in half that lets the ink bleed through the two pieces that have been severed. And it's a very difficult tool to learn unless you've seen someone use it, because it's basically just a razor with water on it. So it's going to bleed, it's going to scratch, it's going to splatter. So if you get a chance to see how they work, now it's super easy because you've got Twitter and Instagram and everything where you can watch videos of people doing it. But I literally had to join a studio where someone else knew how to do it and watch them ink with it before I could figure it out at all. But now I'm probably half and half with those two tools. I really love Raphael brushes. That's the one that seems to work best for me. And then digitally, until Manga Studio came along with their expanded brush sets, inking on a computer wasn't really effective for me, because the brush tools that were the basic ones in Photoshop just never really flowed right. You'd get too much jag and like skip and all this stuff. But thanks to, is it Cal Webster?
Yep, totally different.
Yeah, like yeah. He totally changed all that. Like, for whatever reason, he figured out how to make these systems work and shared it with other people, because Photoshop brushes for a long time were kind of like secret treasure.
And then Adobe hired him, and now he's in the house at Adobe.
Yeah, and so those are great for digital inking now on tablet. I have an iPad and also use Cintiq at home sometimes with those tools. You can get almost the exact same results. It's just a matter of whether you prefer the feel of the drag of the paper or you're comfortable with the computer screen, which is a little slicker.
Which do you find faster when it comes to inking, traditional or digital?
It's almost exactly the same, because I don't really undo. Like, I do it either way.
You're used to not having to undo.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just going to keep going until I really reach a problem.
Just do it right the first time, Nolan.
Now, when I do pencil, I actually do
rule
that in Manga
one.
Studio.
Yeah.
Like, for whatever reason, Manga Studio penciling works for me great.
Yeah.
Like, actually, I get better results than I would if I did it by hand.
It's like finding a brand of pencil that you like.
Yeah.
A lot of
people
will fight to the death. Oh, my pencil's better than your pencil. It's a pencil. And you're used to it. That's why it's the better pencil. Probably. Unless it really is a better pencil.
Blackwing.
It's a Blackwing, yeah.
Well, like Jay, I use mostly 102s for traditional stuff. I haven't really done a lot of digital inking. I mean, I've tried digital penciling and stuff like that, but digital inking is still a little tough for me. I still find a lot of this has to because I zoom in a lot in digital, and I shouldn't be. It's just a bad habit that I do, so you spend a lot of time going into minute pixels that you won't see when it's printed. But I like traditional. I'm way faster traditional. Just used to it. Used to how the nib works and how the ink flows on the page, or how it's going to flow, how it behaves. But it's interesting you ask about toolbox because it spans so much years. Like, when I started inking, we didn't have blue line oversized printing or scanners or a lot of that scanning stuff or digital stuff back in the day. And it was more like, when you're practicing Mylars, which is like a more durable tracing paper, because like Jay said, the 102 nibs will just bite into the paper, so you need like a thicker paper to be able to ink over, and tracing paper would just shred if you use 102s on. And that was originally how you inked back in the day, just to learn. And then after, you go straight on the page, and the pencils would be there, and there's no going back if you make a mistake. You usually have a photocopy of the originals in case, you know, you couldn't see something that the penciler drew. And then I'm sure Jay went through this too. It's like there's a phase where the bigger companies start doing blue line stuff or asking people to do blue line, just sending you the scans to print out. And for me, I don't know about Jay, but for me, I kind of had to discover how to change a scan into blue line to print a proper opacity so that I can ink on top of. And at first, you know, you went to Kinko's and you tried asking, oh, just print blue. And then they do it for the first few times and they say, oh, we can't pass a board through, like a art board through that. And it's like, oh, now I have to find an oversized printer. And what happened is like a lot of editors ended up starting to use more and more of that because they didn't have to have the FedEx page. Even if the FedEx is one day, you know, like a pencil, at the latest, they can send it at 7 p.m. usually. Like anything after that, they can't send it until the next morning. And it'll still take a day to get to whoever the inker is, unless you live in the same studio. And the scanning, he can send it at 12 midnight and be in your box, and then it became kind of the inker's responsibility to get the page in because they know you have the page, right? But I kind of learned on the fly doing that stuff to change stuff into blue line, and now it's almost like predominantly blue line inks. With blue line, and I still love doing traditional, partly because you still have like a piece of artwork at the end of the day, like a piece that a lot of the fans still enjoy collecting and having, instead of like, you know, a digital piece. And with Photoshop, I usually just clean up stuff. It's faster cleaning up stuff, spotting blacks, especially on deadlines. It just improves the process for me. It doesn't really add or subtract to what I usually do. So those are my tool sets nowadays.
When you're doing blue lines, are you using like an Epson photo printer?
Epson Artisan is the one I use.
Yeah.
I need to
makes it so easy.
It runs. Yeah. It's weird because the blues is the one you use up, but all the other colors clog up.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you print like a regular, like if you want to print, make a print, it's like it's off streaks because only the blues come out and the reds, yellows, and whatever always clog up, and you waste so much money like trying to like.
That's why I don't have any prints to sell the con this today because I haven't used my printer in 6 months and it all gummed up. Epson printers are bad for that.
Yes. Yeah.
There's tricks, though. I mean, I'm not going to get into it now. But you can use Windex, and you can spray it into the holes, and you can run a shop cloth underneath the head, and you can fix it.
It's a lot of
work. Yeah,
it's a lot of work. It's messy.
Yeah. The only downside of the blue line thing that I've discovered is, like, if the penciler does a lot of underdrawing, you can't tell what they actually want versus what they intended.
Because it's all just as important.
Yeah, so you end up with a lot of this, well, why is there a scar on her face? Well, you drew one. And when you look at the scan, it's clearly a line, but it was actually drawn in red pencil or blue pencil, and it still scans and comes through. It's like, that's the one thing I've had to learn.
I'd rather they scan in color. And I usually go in, like, either if it's a different color, take those marks out.
Yep.
And I usually, when I get a piece, if it's a messy and it's smudgy, I usually, like, color dodge to take out all the all the smudges first so I can see which lines that the pencilers want.
Right.
Now, this may sound to some like one of the dumbest questions ever, and maybe it is. As I've been talking to artists this weekend with the digital side of it, how important is it to keep your software updated? It's not one of those things that, like, if you don't every once in a while, it will foul up, or you do update and it will foul up, or
more likely to have an update causes a problem the other way around.
Right. I know people who still have 10-year-old computers and run Photoshop versions of Photoshop before that it went to the subscription model.
They
stuck with Legacy, so they didn't have to.
Was big on like using 4.
Yes. Yeah, he's a stickler for old stuff.
Yeah. But he does amazing work. So
slowly on his Legacy computer.
Yes, sir.
So as someone who's like trying to get into inking and coloring and stuff, and I don't have access to computers and fancy big printers, were any of you, when you're starting out, just doing your own stuff, or don't people do their own stuff, is there any like sort of like, for example, could you go to Staples and get a decent self-published, like I'm talking zine quality, like is there any tips or tricks for someone who doesn't have access to
you can get like an Epson workforce for about 200, maybe 175.
Less, yeah.
That'll get you done because like it's an 11 by 17 scanner and 11 by 17 printer. Yeah. So yeah.
Because I know like blue, like to do a combo page, I use a bigger oversized.
Yeah.
Well, 1117 is the standard, so
yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, and like seriously, look one of those up on Amazon or Staples or something. Yeah, that's the easiest fix. It's they have Brother and a couple other companies that make the same one, but the Epson for the most part is going to print a better color.
So, and you're not looking for archival quality,
right?
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be crazy high end.
Yeah. Like it's different when we're doing what we're doing, and I'm paying $2,000 for a scanner.
Yeah.
But I bought it in 2004, and it still works today. Whereas the cheaper scanners or printers that you buy, they're going to last you 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And that's true, too. I think if I were to get to do something more professional, I'd be like, okay, well, I need the money to run my business and things, but I have something that's trying to get for me.
Yeah, pay for the level you're at, not for the level you want to be, right?
That's a good lie. I got to remember that.
Well, it's dangerous because I do that. I'm like, oh, hey, I want to get into 3D printing, so I better go buy $2,000 worth of 3D printers that I'll never use.
For those who are answered my query. Go ahead.
Is there anything that you guys see come in that you just have this moment of, oh no, I don't want to have to work on that?
Yes.
What type of thing do you guys horses, just have that moment of, oh no, this is going to be a sucky day?
There's stuff you hate inking.
A lot of tech type of stuff, you know. I'm not, you know, like technical stuff. But I've done it, you know. I mean, it's part of the job because when you're in comics, you never, I mean, you might have some idea if you're on a certain book what's going to come your way, but it could be anything, you know, just depending on where the story takes you, you know. So be prepared to, you know, now there's Google. I mean, you find reference on anything. Before, you know, I used to have a book collection that was, you know, a lot because when I needed reference, I'd have to go out and buy books on helicopters or motorcycles or whatever, you know. Now, Google's a great resource, you know. It's like you can find anything on there.
Everybody had a Jane gun book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a reference. Yeah. I have a standing rule with DC Comics not to ever send me Green Lantern comics to color.
Really? All the color holds and they're like circles.
Because it's, it would be fine if it was like, you know, it was Darwin Cook's version,
right,
where it's just like a graphic line and then a circle. That's nice and clean, and I would love to do that. But anytime when you get like a Green Lantern Corps fighting whatever the rest of the Rainbow Corps is, and you just have energy effects and overlaying, no, I'm not doing that. Just no. I can just picture myself spending like 4 days coloring some space battle that someone's going to read in 2 seconds and flip the page. And I would just weep for my lost life.
Yeah. It's the hyper detail. Like if something's hyper detailed, I'm much less enthusiastic about coloring it. Because something that's going to show up on the page this big isn't really worth the time coloring. But you still got to separate it, otherwise it's flat. I'd rather work on pages that have really good storytelling and composition than tons and tons of detail that doesn't matter.
I like a mix. I mean, I color low a book for image.
Yeah. If you got the detail, it's used to draw the eye, and there's a reason, like you're defining a space. But if it's every panel, that's too much.
Like low.
Yeah,
but it's gorgeous. Yeah, but it has to be a mix. For me, it's a mix. It's like I want a book like Low where it takes me 3 weeks to color it, and I also want some other book where it's just talking heads and black backgrounds that takes me like 3 days to color. You know, I need to be able to like work on the one thing for a few days and pour sweat and stay up late, and then like take an early afternoon off after coloring the same number of pages I did in 3 days on the other book. It's a mix, you know. It helps as long as it's not Green Lantern.
Yeah, as a recovering Green Lantern inker, I understand.
Right. Oh, it'll be worse for you. It's like, oh God, stars everywhere.
Yeah, well, you got to do that and the black with stars behind it, and like, and then figure out like, do I want to halo every person so that the colorist can save some time, or do I just kind of let it go and say sorry about your luck? Yeah.
Nope, too late. I have to get some sleep. Good luck, colorist.
for me that you guys pretty much covered that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's pretty much the same for me. It's like a lot of it's just like the separation. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of detail because I know the colors has to set. Like I don't want to make it too hard on the colors because there's, you know, especially foreground, background. As an inker, that's part of your job is try to help the separation. And if there's too much detail, it starts blending in. Like even if I can't separate, then I know the colors is going to have a super hard time with it. And the only other hard thing is if I get a penciler that doesn't, because I'm a 102 nib inker primarily, if it's like a softer or more organic penciler, I always have trouble finding a proper way of adapting to it. But, you know, I end up adapting, so I mean, it just takes a little longer to get adjusted to it. And if it's a tight deadline, it's very hard to adapt to the penciler. So that's why I like working with artists I've worked with before or have like some history with.
I love doing these panels because I get insights and stuff like that that I hadn't thought of before. And now it's like, after what you said, I'm like, so that's why Jeff Darrow works with Dave Stewart, like almost primarily. It's
yeah.
So another one right there.
Do you guys get notes or any kind of hints from the pencilers or the editor on what they want on a particular page or image, or it's kind of like you get a Dropbox notification and push it the best one?
Both.
Yeah, I guess yeah, what's both. The work process both. Like? Yeah.
Everybody's yes. different.
Mm-hmm. The thing that gets me every now and then is I forget to write. Like when Nolan and I work together, the penciler would write in pencil, you know, stat this panel, but change color for effect or whatever. And I would forget to pass that note on. So luckily everybody, like we have like an email chain where the pencils are in the email chain so they can go back and reference that if they need to. But every now and then something has gotten through where I've kind of forgotten to at least pass the note along and created a problem for someone else. And that always makes me feel bad. But we are pretty good at communicating, I think, in general, in terms of if I have a certain idea for something, I think in the colors, like go ahead and color hold this line because I'm trying to create this effect where there's a shadow being cast over someone, and I just drew a line that said, you know, Sentinel's walking into the space and they're creating this big long cast shadow. It might not actually make sense in the panel until the next panel where it's zoomed out and you see it. So just have to remind someone along the way to color hold that, or if there's a texture that's not really working by the time it's colored, we can kind of talk through those things and figure out a way to mesh better.
Everyone's experience is different. Mine has been that the writer tends to incorporate a lot of that thought into the script. Yeah. So they're conveying their thoughts to the penciler, the inker, and the colorist, if they have color notes. But usually I'm just left to my own devices to do whatever the hell I want.
Those are the most fun.
Yeah. Yes. And then, but on Fight Club 3, I get long, extensive email chains of notes, which crushes my heart. I mean, they're smart notes. Don't get me wrong. They're smart notes. But it's Chuck Palahniuk, Fight Club writer. He writes the comics, so he's really hands-on on it. And he's not used to the whole having other people collaborating with him concept. So he's very pulling the strings. That's fine, because he's got good ideas.
Has it been getting lighter? Because it's like the third series at this point.
No, it's getting more complicated.
Oh.
Because it's flashback within flashback within flashback within flashback.
No, I meant like his notes. Is he getting more comfortable with it? Or?
No, they're just, he's adding on to the previous notes.
Oh, okay.
That's okay, though. Again, it's interesting to me, because I'm not used to that. I've gotten used to just getting the art and just doing whatever the heck I want with it. But it's nice collaborating. Like, when I worked on the Batman animated series, that we'd have story design meetings. We'd all sit together and we'd all hash it out. And I like that collaborative process. It's harder to do that in comics often because people don't live in the same town or even the same time zone most of the time. People live all over the world, speak different languages. So communication has sort of broken down to, like I said, the writer sending out notes and maybe someone translating it for somebody along the way.
And those are always fun when it gets translated incorrectly.
Yeah. But, it works that way most of the time.
Yes, sir.
Just as you guys are talking about collaborating and working with other artists or writers, I have noticed, this is like just something I've noticed with older artists in the comic industry, there's a certain jadedness that starts to develop where they kind of have stories about different people and just say, I don't want to talk about it kind of stuff. How do you
That's a tricky conversation.
Sorry, yeah.
Well, because it's a professional industry with a lot of unprofessional people who live in their home and never leave.
Yeah.
So you get all these really strong personalities, all full of like just ego-driven personalities, creating their own universes in their own way. So everybody has their own way of doing it. So you get all sorts of conflicts associated with that. And when they say, I don't want to talk about it, there's a number of reasons. One, you're too angry to talk about it. And two, you can say, oh, I'm upset, but you don't want to talk out of school. You want to keep it professional. So it's tricky.
It's a small industry, too. Right?
It is. And bridges get burned. I mean, I've got stories where, like, I remember standing up screaming on the phone to somebody. And I'm like, again, I don't want to talk about it.
That's the exception. That's the exception. More often than not, the collaboration, much better. As a colorist, we don't tend to have a lot of contact with other people. But, yeah, that's the exception to the rule when there is lots of contact.
Because everyone knows, like, the whole chapter and standing thing. And I've noticed a lot of people who are, like, they'll use that as an example. Like, you know, making sure if you're creating story or artist and writer, make sure everything is, like, created and okay, cool, this is yours, this is
mine. Creative field is just full of people like that. My wife's a fashion designer. And my stories about comics pale in comparison to the horror stories that she tells me about people exploiting, because there's more money involved with it, right? So instead of talking about thousands of dollars, it's like millions and millions of dollars. So people, eviler people, get in charge. And the fights are bigger and uglier, you know?
Has the communication process gotten easier now with email?
It's awesome.
Because you don't have to make a long-distance phone call to somebody. Oh.
It's even better.
Just shoot off an email and get a response back.
Well, now with DC is even better now, because there's Box, which is a file sharing program, and you can actually send notes to each other on Box. So you can talk about each individual page, like, so the team can all weigh in on each page and make suggestions.
That's
so
nice.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. We've kind of adapted that on Outrage, where we have a Trello account.
Right.
So every page gets posted in Trello, and we keep track of who turned in when what, so we can kind of go back and be like, hey, at that deadline, you blew that one.
Yeah.
So we can at least point out, like, where the problems occur, that kind of thing. Like, so it's good to track that, and we can also keep, like, character reference on file that way. And I think editorially, it sounds like DC is moving in that way, which is good. So hopefully Marvel develops something like that, too, because... Uh-huh. I think it'd just be great.
Marvel will, though, because they've always been good. Like, on the Marvel server, on their FTP, they used to have, like, SketchUp versions of a lot of the more popular buildings, so artists could download them and locate them. Yeah, and then, like, reference for a lot of the characters. Yep. Like, the Marvel Universe pages were all up on the server.
Mm-hmm. But it's updated.
Yeah, of course, yeah. For, like, characters like the Avengers, it's, like, 50 costumes ago for so-and-so character.
Yeah.
That I think that closed circuit sort of conversation idea is a good one, too, because I'm not going to mention names, but a Marvel artist I was chatting with on Gmail accidentally sent me a cover because he was talking to somebody else in another conversation.
Oops.
Yeah. Followed by the message of ... You didn't see that.
Right. Yeah.
Anybody else got a question? I thought I saw another hand up when I was... Okay, well, we'll go back to my notes then. Because I don't work in the industry, I like kind of hearing horror stories from time to time. What's the tightest deadline you've had to try and get through?
I used to regularly color Northlanders in a day.
Really?
Yeah.
He's insane. Yeah. So that doesn't count.
I will point out that during the convention, I've colored 7 pages of Lucifer.
Like I said, he's insane. That doesn't
count. Casually talking to people and selling books. So I'm fast.
You make me sick.
And then I think I colored Next Wave. I regularly colored Next Wave that fast, too. Just because the book was a comedy book, and I liked the immediacy of it. Mm-hmm. I liked being able to, I liked the live line, so all my shapes were all like, whoosh, 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 as fast as I could do it. Because it met the cartoony style. Stuart Amon was drawing it. And his shapes are all really animation style, where lots of straight lines, lots of curved lines, delineating the shapes. So I went in and did the same thing with the color. And the faster I went, the happier I was with it. Which was a convenient convergence that doesn't normally work. Hey, faster's better in this case, so good.
So the consensus is Dave is insane. What is the tightest thing?
For a colorist, 3 days.
3 days?
That's, yeah.
Holy shit. That's yeah. much more
that's
common.
That's healthy. Yeah. Well,
it's not healthy, but it's more common.
Healthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole book.
I still
whole book.
Find that still
if I have to do, if it's a regular book, like a regular superhero team book, if somebody asked me to do 7 pages a day, I would go punch a wall. Like Avengers or something like that, where you got 50 million guys. It must be like that with inking, right? Yep. I mean, the more guys on the page, the longer. That's why the penciler gets you the pages late and why you're crushed against the wall on the deadline, right?
Yeah. And he's not kidding either. I have a heavy bag in my studio, so I actually go and punch things.
Right.
With my picture ever on it?
No. You're safe, man. You're safe. You're safe.
But yeah,
get the bag. Go direct to the source of your problem. Right. Usually it's the writer.
Yeah.
No the writer comment. Gets stuff to the
What do you mean
late.
50 ninjas in the background, you bastard?
And the penciler.
Crowd scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a few that were pretty rough, like Scotty Young and Mark Brooks. On New Mutants, for whatever reason, things went really sideways, and I came in to do 2 issues where we had less than 3 days for all 20 pages.
Oh.
And Scotty was literally like, he was drawing them like this big, uh-huh. emailing them to me, and I blew them up to actual print size. And it was no more than an hour per page. Was like we both just agreed that that's how we had to get it done because the colorist still had to get done in the same right. time period too.
That's a pretty good cheat. I've known a lot of guys. Like, there's a guy, Doug Wheatley, a Canadian artist, mm-hmm. who now just did a book with George R.R. Martin. He illustrated the history yeah. of Westeros. But he learned eventually that if he drew his page full size and put the kind of detail... A lot of guys learned to draw in the 90s following comics, and they would just get a comic book and figure they were drawn that size mm-hmm. before the internet. Nobody knew that they actually drew them... larger. So you learn to draw that small and then somebody gives you a page this big, you're basically just drawing 4 comic book pages. You know what I mean? Because you're drawing with that same level of detail. And he did that for years and it would take him like a week to draw a page and sweat and pour off of him and he'd fall asleep on his desk. And eventually he realized, hey, if I just actually shrink the page down to what I thought you did, then I can get a reasonable amount of work done. So he did. He forced himself to lose the detail by drawing small.
Yeah, with comics, it's not about what each step looks like. It's about the final product. So it doesn't matter what size you work at. It's yeah. what's comfortable for you. Right. Just like the tool, whatever pencil, whatever size, as long as it's proportional, you're good.
Yeah. That's why you have that danger with digital, because you're zooming way in.
Yep.
So you're really inking a page this big with all this detail.
Yeah.
Just that happened.
Yeah.
So we have 5 minutes left, so if you have any questions, feel free to ask them now, because this is your last go, until you have to go to each one of them individually. Anyways, go ahead.
So I was going to ask about the color trend. Like, is it becoming more detailed, the coloring, or certain comics, like, say, the Archies is more like flat colors, not so much shadowing?
I think the trend is turning into one where you shouldn't be able to tell how it was colored, and it's up to the individual art team and the style of the book. Photoshop and other programs like it now allow you to color in such a way that there's no way you can distinguish it between real-world watercolor, real-world gouache paint, real-world oil paint. It's just whatever you want it to look like. So... it should suit the story. If you want it flat, that's great. That looks good. But it should be a stylistic choice. You shouldn't do it just because it's the, I don't know.
Well, the biggest trend for color is just we're finally being considered artists ourselves. And that means you're going to have the variety of color just like you have the variety of artists. There's no one trend, specific trend.
The merge between penciler, inker, and colorist is becoming more cohesive. So I find myself on some projects inking over... like, I ink, too. So I find myself inking over top of some inks right. and adding my color into it.
I feel like the best colorists all know how to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I mean, the best artists in any field that's cross-discipline where you're doing it sort of assembly line, the better penciler you are, the better colorist you are, the better whatever you are, you're going to be better at every other aspect of it. So
yeah, I didn't realize that early on, but I was roommates with Peter Steigerwald for a few years, mm-hmm. and... watching him color and watching Steve Furco color, they would go in and they would move an eye. They'd be like, no, this is wrong. I'm going to move it over like 3 pixels and now it's better. Yeah.
Nolan and I just worked on a big project for Adidas.
Oh.
Where we had to do 60 illustrations of NBA and WNBA basketball players dressed as Avengers wearing mm-hmm. these new sneakers that Adidas is putting out. And I put in so many hours doing just inking corrections. Because,
yeah.
I mean, the way it would work is they would change the shoe mid-production and we'd have to go in and add stuff. Or the artist would be really rushed and, like, the eye thing. Yeah. I did a lot of that.
Alrighty. Well, unfortunately, we've got to wrap things up. If you have more questions, I'm sure these gentlemen would be kind enough to answer them at their tables. But in the meantime, if everybody would give them a nice round of applause...